Welcome to Tech San Diego Spotlight, where we look at all things tech and otherwise. It's a balmy morning here in technology's perfect climate, something we didn't expect this morning, but we'll deal with it. So, once a year, I usually get my good friend Tony Anscom from ESET to talk about all things cybersecurity. And I know there's a lot of cybersecurity information out there and everyone likes to keep up, but I really like to have just a conversation with Tony to find out, you know, what may have changed, what's new, what should we be looking out for, and maybe what's important, what's kind of ahead on the horizon. So Tony, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, good to be here again, Kevin.
And Tony, I've met you a couple times, so I make the assumption that everyone knows you, but just for the sake of people who may not know who you are, give us a really quick background on who you are and what you do.
Well, I'm the chief security evangelist at ESET. We're a cybersecurity company. A lot of people know us for our endpoint protection, but we also do threat intelligence and a lot of cybersecurity research. But me personally, Kevin, I'm an ex-programmer back in the day on those mainframes and COBOL. I keep hearing rumors that COBOL programmers get paid a lot. So who knows, I might dust off those skills one day.
You're dating yourself, COBOL and Fortran. And yeah, there's some defense. Gosh knows what they're working on, but there's still a need for some of those COBOL and Fortran programmers. So, you never know. I guess if all the cybersecurity gets fixed and there's never, ever a problem with cyber, you always have something to fall back on, I guess.
Absolutely. However, unfortunately, I don't think the cybersecurity thing will ever get fixed.
Either do I. We could always wish cast a little bit. Let me jump right into it. So, has the landscape evolved since last year? What are you guys seeing that's different? And what are you seeing that's the same, but maybe a little bit more aggressive? But just, focusing on the last 12 or 18 months, what do you think might be different in the cyber security landscape?
Well, we're certainly seeing a lot of sophisticated attacks. So cyber criminals are definitely upping their game and a shift from clicking links and such like to cyber criminals using other methods to gain access. And one of those ways is vulnerabilities. So, if you have a piece of hardware or a device and it's running some firmware / software and that has a vulnerability on it, somebody doesn't patch it and the cyber criminal comes along and exploits it to gain access to their network. And that's certainly a big trend. And any business you talk to now, one of their big headaches is the whole vulnerability management and patch management within the organization to keep themselves secure.
It's funny, Tony, because it seemed for a while it kind of moved away from the kind of the patch and the technical aspect into more of the social and clicking the link. And so what I'm hearing from you is there's really that never went away. It was always there, but it just the link and some of the social engineering was just an added layer. Would that assumption be correct?
Yes, and if you look at some of the changes over the last couple of years, things like RDP, so remote desktop protocol, became a little bit more secure with changes in the operating system and knowledge and education in the marketplace. So cyber criminals had to look for other methods to get in. And exploiting those vulnerabilities is certainly one of the ways they're doing it.
So you talked about, and that goes into, everyone wants to know what are the vectors that people are coming in, right? And so, it used to be, I think you're right. It used to be, I think when, last year or the year before, we talked a lot about some of the remote work software and the vulnerabilities built into that. I had, someone that wouldn't work on Teams, for example, because they said, that was a vulnerability. I said, well, anything that has, where you have an endpoint and a beginning point, in some ways, I guess is vulnerable. Has any of those kind of common ones been hardened at all? The Zoom, the Teams, some of those kind of common vehicles on sharing files and collaboration tools?
I think so, yeah. The big one there is what I just mentioned, remote desktop protocol, which was the one that was being exploited a lot. I mean, Microsoft made some changes to stop brute forcing. So that's where somebody just continually tries to access the system without intellect, I would say, because they're brute forces without intellect, or they're credential stuffing. But a lot of that got fixed out. However, I caveat that with, I sat with somebody recently, somebody I know in the education space, and they sat there, opened their laptop, had a very weak password on the laptop. I know the person quite well. And then accessed, they work in education, they accessed their school system without any multi-factor authentication or without putting in a password. And it's like, how are we still here? How is any, how are organizations still allowing connectivity in that way? So I say it's got better, but it's not fixed. And a lot of companies, unfortunately, out there still haven't quite got the message, or they think they haven't got data, or they think they're not a target, and will never become a victim. Well, unfortunately, you and I think both know, Kevin, it's not an if you become a victim, it's a when.
Unfortunately, that's all too true. And I guess the weak point is always the user, right? And so, people can come in and fix everything they can, but it just takes one employee with very bad cyber habits to do this. And it is nice to see a little bit of the cyber education extending beyond IT, right? And so everyone in the company should be familiar with that. Hey, with the, here's a big one that we've seen and read a lot about is the challenges on the rise of AI in cyber. Whether that's, the phishing techniques that I see now, you don't see the broken English, you don't see the syntax, they look real, right? And so how has AI made it easier for the bad guys to come and get us?
Well, the large language models, so ChatGPT and such like, of course, have meant that all of us can improve our output slightly if you want to, because you can take your text across there and say, hey, can you please craft this in a slightly better language for me? And off it will go, and it will come back with the periods in the correct place, the capitalization will be correct, and the language might flow slightly easier. So unfortunately, phishing emails, as you just said, have got somewhat better. They're being corrected, which makes it, of course, harder for us as humans to spot those not deliberate mistakes, but those obvious mistakes that we look for. But it's still, the mistakes are still there in the addressing and things like that. So you just need to be a little bit more cautious on making sure you mouse over the email address, make sure it looks correct, etc. But even that, of course, can be spoofed on occasion. So yeah, it's becoming more challenging.
I had an issue. I had one from PayPal. I got a text that said, this is to authenticate that we're sending you an email. And I got the email and it says, to authenticate this email, go back to your text and give us the code. And I mean, it looked really legit. I mean, I was really, really close. And I like to think I'm pretty educated. And then at the last minute, I caught myself and I'm thinking, well, I started putting the puzzle together and walked away from it. So it does seem to be, you have to be a lot more on it. I know for the very, very big targets, there's been a lot of media reports about AI generated voices and things like that. I take it that's still, you're probably not seeing a lot of that in the mainstream. I mean, there may be some isolated, because that would be a lot of work for cyber gang to put together. Is that still kind of at the upper echelon of targets, or is that starting to drift down a little bit, do you think?
Well, it's certainly there. And I don't know whether you remember back, Kevin, there was an incident back in 2018, 2019 with an energy company in Europe where they were duped out of, I think, just over $250,000 by somebody using deepfake audio. And that's where the cyber attacker had mimicked the CEO and in real time had a conversation with the CFO while the CEO was actually realistically on a plane. So, of course, uncontactable. And the CFO thought they were talking to the CEO, even with the CEO was German, and even the accent was apparently correct. So, I mean, the technology's there. It's becoming more accessible. You know, whereas you'd have had to have some very sophisticated tools, some very interesting hosting and lots of processing power to actually do it. What it's doing is making it accessible to everybody. But you know, this one of the big issues there is that business email compromise. So where you know, somebody rings you, Kevin, and says, hey, I need that transfer of funds really quickly. There, we've got a supplier. It's a work issue. You just need to have the right policy in place as a company that you have a verification method. So if somebody is in an urgent need for a funds transfer, there's a second path for verification, i.e., you know, you walk down the corridor and see them, you phone them on their number directly. You know, that second part of that verification needs to be in the process.
Let's talk about what happens when you just for a second. What happens when you're on the wrong side of this and you've had an intrusion? And what do you think are some of the mistakes that companies first make? I mean, what's the you've been hacked? Let's say it's a ransomware. They're asking for money. I know those early responses are really critical. What do you see as some of the most common mistakes when that first happens?
Well, one of the common mistakes, Kevin, I'll kind of step back slightly from that, is you may well have great cybersecurity tools in place, but you may be ignoring the alerts and warnings that it's giving you. And we unfortunately see that somewhat frequently where somebody needed cyber insurance or cyber risk insurance. So they've deployed the relevant tools, and then the tools give them these warnings, but there's too many warnings. They're too resource strapped. So therefore they start ignoring the warnings. Well, there is the first big mistake. So, you know, make sure that you're actually looking at the tools that are telling you that you may well be under attack. But once you've been attacked, it's about limiting damage. We've seen that in the press. If you remember the MGM and Caesars incidents where, you know, suddenly everybody goes, oh, I'm locked out of my hotel room. I can't do this and I can't do that. Well, that's because somebody is deploying the correct response. They're starting to segment, shut down their systems. They're starting to turn off anything that's got a connection. And we saw the same recently with Change Health. If you remember, if you've been following that ransomware incident, yeah, I think they turned off something like 111 systems fairly instantly to stop the spread of the ransomware. So the response is very much about locking and segmenting, but also you need to be communicating. And when I say communicating, I mean communicating with your business partners and your customers. They need to know what's going on because otherwise you end up with lots of speculation.
Yeah, and I think that's where some companies get in trouble, right? They want to try to contain it and contain news of it. And, you know, we were in a group with some folks talking. They said, you know, I would even be hesitant to bring law enforcement in. And, you know, I tried to explain to them why that might be a mistake and the resources that brings. And you know, I think transparency and really acting quickly is, and I think these kind of segmenting and limiting that damage would really be key. What are some good best practices on putting, and I know this is a really tough question, and I know it's probably a long answer, but still, if a company came to you and let's say they were a small mid-sized company, let's say, you know, $50, $100 million in revenue, what are some of the first questions that you're going to ask them to see if they have a good, cybersecurity awareness and some tools? What are the first two or three questions that you're going to ask them?
Well, that's a big question, Kevin.
That's why you get paid the big bucks and I don't.
Well, there's some key things of you can tell how serious they are about their cybersecurity posture by understanding some of the things they've got deployed in their environment. So have they made the shift from just endpoint security across to having endpoint detection and response systems? Now, the difference between those two, one is, looking for malware and looking for those strange things that happen on your machine. And whereas EDR, that detection and response system, is actually looking at where your machine's, where it's communicating, what processes are running on it, etc. So it's looking for the other things. So bear in mind, a cyber criminal may get in today and sit in there for a while. not actually use anything malicious, but be communicating with the outside and exfiltrating data and such like. So, you know, the whole cybersecurity posture changed around not only blocking, but also knowing what's going on. And I think that says a lot about where a company's posture is, of whether they've made that kind of shift. Now, enterprises, definitely. Maybe the $150 million business, I would say, yeah, I'd pretty much say they're probably across there. Some of those smaller businesses, well, maybe not. And it's something they need to be looking at. And if they don't have the skill sets and the resources to do it, then they should be looking for a managed service to do that. So what's known in the industry as managed detection and response, so MDR.
And we've certainly seen that with the smaller companies. And, you know, part of the challenge, I think, for the entire industry is, you know, the lack of cybersecurity professionals, right? So we just don't have enough of these really smart folks that could come in and help the companies. Do you think do you see that as an impediment to companies having the right set of barriers in place, kind of a lack of lack of more cybersecurity professionals?
It's certainly an issue. If you look at other companies, you see more and more automation coming in, and that automation is because of the lack of professionals in the industry. However, it's important that you actually have human expertise as well. Because, you know, as we were talking about just a moment ago with AI, you know, we hear a lot about AI, but guess what you need to train AI? Well, you need humans to tell it what data sets to go look at and sort of stuff. You also need to make sure that the output from any automation is correct. So you still need human expertise in there. But I think the last number I saw was there's 4 million people globally short in the cybersecurity industry. So that's not going to get fixed anytime soon. Which is why, actually, I think a lot of companies are actually looking and switching across to managed services, because even if you've got a skill set in your own team, you can pass off what I define as the operational part. Well, there's two ways of doing it. You can siphon off the operational part to a managed service provider and leave your own staff dealing with the interesting stuff. Or you could, of course, reverse that, leave your own team doing the operational stuff and ask for experts on the interesting stuff. Depends on how talented your own internal resources.
And we've certainly seen that with our companies, and we have several Tech San Diego members, managed service companies here in town, Infracore and Connectic, and some other folks that do a really good job at that. Tony, is it getting worse or is it getting better?
Well, unfortunately, I think it's getting worse. However, yeah, if you look at Chainalysis, the blockchain company, monitor transactions they believe that are paid to ransomware criminals. And it's a really good indicator of, you know, roughly where that is. So if you look at 2021, that was just shy of $1 billion. In 2022, there was a decline to nearly half of that. So you'd assume that we're going in the right direction. However, 2023 was $1.1 billion. So unfortunately, it's going in the wrong direction again. Now, why did you get that roller coaster? You know, the decline in 2022, conflict in Ukraine, there was lots of law enforcement. Some of the groups were taken down. That was the year of Colonial Pipeline. There's so many different reasons why you had that decline. But we're back where we were. Now, is it an increase? The answer to that actually is no, Kevin, because 1 billion to 1.1 billion is an inflationary increase. So it's just a cost of living issue for cyber criminals. Maybe you, I point that out because it means it's plateauing back to 2021, maybe not increasing. But is it going to get better? I think there needs to be a monumental change. And a very unpopular thing to say, you know, maybe we should be regulating cryptocurrencies further. But something needs to change. We need to follow the money in ways that maybe haven't been done before and cut the monetization out of it.
Yeah, I think, Tony, I've heard you say that before, and that's very, I think at the end of the day, I think that's what's going to have to be done. But it's interesting the ransomware gangs are raising their prices as well, and so everyone's raising prices across the board, I guess. For those of you listening, I go on the ESET webpage at least once a week to look at resources. It's how I keep up on cybersecurity trends and other things. When I first introduced you, I just introduced you as the chief evangelist. But tell us a little bit about ESET. I know all about ESET, but that's just me. But for those of people who are listening, tell us a little bit about ESET. And some of the resources.
So we're a very long-standing cybersecurity company. We've been in business for well over 30 years now. So if you go back, that means we were detecting those first viruses when they started to appear. But these days, we're about providing that endpoint solution, so the security on the endpoint for both prevention and that detection and response piece as well, and the managed service that goes behind it. But also, we provide a lot of threat intelligence. So proudly, we're a JCDC partner with CISA. So we provide some intelligence on critical infrastructure attacks and such like back to the US government to keep us all safe. We're at the heart of the company, we're a research company. Yeah, so we are a product company, but if you look at us, the founders are still the owners of the business. There's no outside influence. And we're still very much taking those malicious incidents apart, understanding the techniques and the tactics being used by the cyber criminals. And we publish that. And we publish that on a website called welivesecurity.com. So even if somebody's not using our product, they can go there, read the research, and typically we publish a list of the IOCs, so the indicators of compromise, which for the cybersecurity folks in all those companies out there, you'll find super useful. You can download them from GitHub, et cetera, and build them into your existing architecture. So, I always think of us as a cybersecurity research company, Kevin, but I get told off by our product people because
they want to put those ESET products on everyone's enterprise system. It's funny because what I've always appreciated about the ESET system is that it's always seemed to run in the background, and it has this, I don't know, maybe this isn't the case anymore. I'm sure it is, but it really never slowed anything down. Right. And a lot of the more popular kind of antivirus programs, it seemed like they were taking most of the resources for the computer. And whenever I used ESET, I couldn't tell it was there. And it always seems like you guys, and I think this in cybersecurity, just a little bit matters. You guys always seem to be a little bit ahead of the curve, right? It's while others were catching up, it seemed like you guys were already there. So with that in mind, since we do this annually, and I might talk to you between here and a year about something else. Who knows? It's always nice to talk to Tony. But what may be just a little bit over the horizon that we may be talking about next year?
Well, I think this time next year we'll be behind the elections, and I say that elections because I think there are 64 countries around the globe that are going to the polls in the next 12 months. So while obviously we're concerned here in the US about deepfake technology and fake news and disinformation and all those sorts of things, I think we're going to see some really interesting use of technology to try and trick voters. I mean, not just here, but around the world. And I think we're going to see people trying to exploit voting systems. So, I reckon this time next year, if we were talking, I think there might be a lot to talk about a year of elections and a year of how cybercrime moved on. But unfortunately, on the other side of that as well, I think the whole ransomware issue is going to continue. Yes, cyber risk insurance is upping everybody's game because they're putting in more and more requirements. But with that, there's so much money in this for cyber criminals that they will look for more sophisticated ways to evolve and to unfortunately attack us. So I think this is a work in progress for cybersecurity.
Well, we all need to stay vigilant. Tony, I could talk to you for hours on this, but it's a podcast and we have to start closing this up. Any kind of parting warnings, any other thing that maybe we didn't address that you'd like to get in there?
Well, the one thing I would say is don't ignore what your products tell you. Make sure you're doing things timely. Cybersecurity is not something that comes around once a year if you're a medium or small business and you do have cyber risk insurance. Cybersecurity is not something you think about once a year. You know, make sure you're thinking about it continually. You said, Kevin, you go and check out our news website once a week. If you see prevalence in phishing campaigns suddenly in your organization, do another awareness module with your staff. Send out a 10-minute refresher on how to identify phishing emails. So make sure you're being proactive and make sure you're actually taking care of the things that you can fix easily. And the biggest thing is vulnerability and patch management. Somebody tells you there's a vulnerability in a product, patch it. And don't delay. Unfortunately, we're seeing way too many of those vulnerabilities being exploited.
Well, I think that's really good advice, Tony. And a lot of this, it always seems a lot of this comes down to sometimes just common sense, right? Patching, you're getting notices that you need to patch something and, the phishing, a lot of it seems common sense, but I think, unfortunately, sometimes too few of us have common sense these days.
That's true. And I think there is still an element in there of it's not going to happen to me. Unfortunately, you may well be the next victim.
All right, Tony, thank you. Thank the ESET for loaning you out all the time to get this information out. When you come to San Diego, let me know. I'll buy you a pint, and you could talk to me about all your cybersecurity war stories.
I look forward to that, Kevin.
All right, thanks, Tony.
Since 1994, Tech San Diego has provided a unifying voice for San Diego's technology community, fostering growth and business acceleration through collaborations between industry, education, and government. To learn more about us, visit www.techsandiego.org. This episode of TSD Spotlight was hosted by Kevin Carroll, Executive Director of Tech San Diego. Many thanks to Tony Anscombe, Chief Cybersecurity Evangelist from ESET. Over 1 billion users worldwide rely on ESET solutions to stay secure from increasingly sophisticated digital threats. ESET's award-winning IT security software and services provide protection in over 200 countries and territories worldwide, with its software localized into more than 30 languages. Learn more about ESET at ESET.com. Producers for Tech San Diego Spotlight are Kevin Carroll and Sarah Spiva. Tech San Diego Spotlight is recorded remotely and edited by Hypable Impact. If you enjoyed this podcast episode, make sure to like, follow, and share.